This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime. We'll begin this week with Broadway Is My Beat and the Ted Eberle murder case, their story from December 29, 1951. After that, it's Richard Diamond, private detective, and the William Holland case, his episode from May 31, 1953.
Yes?
You Ross Locke?
That's right. And you?
Police.
You got a reason to come around this time of night? My wife and I were just going to sleep.
You were in a place earlier tonight, a bar on 139th off 7th.
Lots of bars on that street.
There's an alley behind this one where a man was beaten to death.
Ross? Who is it?
Nobody at all, honey. You just go back to sleep. You said a man was beaten to death?
A man who invited you out into an alley. A shoe salesman named Ted Eberle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Honey. Janie.
Whoever it is, Ross. Oh, you gotta get to sleep.
I gotta go out for a while, honey. Now, don't you wait up for me, you hear? All right. Let's go, huh? Quietly. We're waking everybody in the house.
Sit over there, Ross. This is Detective Muggle.
Hi, Ross.
Now we all know each other.
That's right. We're going to get along, too, aren't we, Ross?
Sure. Sure, anything you say.
Tell me you're a fighter, Ross. Welter. Good one. Muggavan here is quite a fight fan. I just mentioned your name to him. He knew all about you.
Sure, every time you hit the garden, that was me in the aisle seat, third row. You had class. Real class. Danny?
Yeah?
How many times have I told you about this boy? How many times a week I ask myself why a boy like Ross quits, resigns from the field, a champ with crowbars in his fist?
Why ask yourself? Why not ask me?
All right, Ross. I'm asking.
Fighting? That's not the way. Not for me. The other boys. I know all the reasons why they fight. All the reasons. But me?
What's for you, Ross?
I make models.
Models? Kids' airplanes, ships and bottles, things like that?
From blueprints, inventions, buildings, machines, all to scale. Gives them a chance to see and touch what they were dreaming about on the drafting board. Gives me a chance to use my hands. Real fine work. To scale. I like that.
Sounds interesting.
I like it.
Sure you do. You killed a man tonight, Ross.
I didn't kill him.
Well, maybe you didn't mean to at first. Maybe you forgot. A boy with fists like yours. Deadly weapons, we call it. A fighter can kill a man easy with hands like yours.
I told you...
No, you haven't, Ross. You haven't told us a thing. Except you were in the bar.
I was sitting there with my friend, just talking. This guy came up, this slummer, drunk, tried to pick a fight. They do that sometimes. Gives them kicks because they remember I was a fighter once.
Sure. Sure, they do that. But this one you took out in the alley. Beat him to death. Murdered him.
Yeah, I took him out in the alley. Put my arm around him, tried to talk to him, reason with him. I'm crazy. I do that sometimes. I walked him up the alley from the bar. He broke away, pulled a jackknife, came after me. Passed out before he got to me in a heap. Poor, miserable drunk.
And after that?
I didn't touch him. Just walked away from him. Turned around, walked away, down the other end of the alley. Went home.
Hello, boys. Guess what I got, boys.
We give up, Webster. What have you got?
A writ. That ever-loving writ. Habeas corpus. Don't talk to them anymore, Ross, boy. You don't have to. I'm taking you away from all this.
I don't know you.
I know, boy. I know. And I'm a friend of a friend of yours. A fellow you haven't been very nice to. Jack Colboy, your former manager. But he's sure nice to you, Colboy. He hired old Billy Webster, counselor. And you're going to get up and walk out of here. Just because I say so. Isn't he, boy?
Yeah. And you too, Webster. Leave with him. The next morning, look up a man named Jack Colville. Come up with an address of a place, Ozzy's Gym on Amsterdam. Go there. A gym like a thousand others. Sweaty, hot, training quarters for latter-day gladiators, classed variously according to poundage, records, expectations. Boxers, punchers, bums. Past the middleweight, who was being furious at a canvas bag. A lightweight, being nimble with a jumping rope. Brushed against a man in an overcoat who had taken a fighting stance and was sneering his broken face into a full-length mirror. Stop a boy with a bucket and ask for Jack Colbo. And be told that's him over near the ring in the purple T-shirt.
The left, kid. Throw it. What's the matter with you? Throw the left, huh? No.
Your name Colbo?
Yeah. So toss it already. Don't stand there and wave it. Go ahead. Okay, kid. Do something with the heavy bag. 3 rounds. Okay, what?
I'm from the police. I want to know what made you hire a lawyer for Ross Locke.
You think because Christmas is over I'm strange because I'm friendly?
I just asked you.
I'm just telling you. I'm friendly to Ross Locke. What's the matter with you? Don't you have friends?
Look, Mr. Colbo, I'm trying to find out all I can about Ross Locke. As I understand it, you used to manage him. He was a comer. He left you. Didn't it bother you?
It looked like I'm stone. Sure it bothered me. A fighter like him giving up all that dough. Sure, dough for me, too. Sure it bothers me.
But you're still his friend.
Sure I am. Especially what I saw last night.
You were at that bar last night? You saw the fight? Where were you when I got there?
Trying to find Ross.
Just tell me what happened.
Dame standing in the doorway with a bottle. I couldn't get near Ross and that slummer. Ran outside and around the block and up the alley. Slummer was banging on Ross. The names he was calling him. I'm going to court and testify self-defense for Ross, like it was.
Ross said he didn't put a hand on that man.
Maybe that's a story Ross was planning to use, but that's not the way it happened. Me testifying, my lawyer's self-defense plea.
Possibly the dead man was holding a jackknife.
So it'll be simple. I'm going to take care of everything. I'm going to... Pardon me. Yeah. Yeah, he's here. I'll take the message. Sure, I'll tell him. It's for you. I just don't let people to use my phone. Germs on the mouthpiece.
What was the message, Colbo?
Message is about the Harlem River at the end of Lenox. Said that's where you were wanted. In a hurry. You leaving? Goodbye.
Over here, Danny.
Who found her?
Some kid. Looked in the river, there she was. Yelled for the police. Got her out just a little while ago.
Why'd you call me, Muggerman? Couldn't you handle it?
I didn't think you'd want me to.
What?
Didn't they tell you over the phone?
Come on. Who is she?
I'll take the blanket off. See?
Carol Bennett.
Uh-huh. The woman who screamed murder in the alley last night. You better look close, Danny.
Murdered.
That's right. Carol Bennett, Danny. Strangled to death.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. For each hour of each day of the year, someone dies. A man steps off the curb without looking in both directions. A woman jaywalks. And a child turns a corner on his bicycle without looking first. Nearly 9,000 pedestrians were killed in these and other motor accidents during 1951. The fault, many times, is yours, the pedestrian. Careless walking is as dangerous as careless driving. Broadway makes happy holidays for the time of the year's dying. Those 12 long months with not enough laughter, they're going now, and it's a time for dancing. So hurry up and exchange the Christmas presents. Get out on the street, buy a noisemaker, and create a stir. It's the thing to do. Join the mob kit. Everybody's making the new dreams for the new year. Maybe even today, maybe the golden girl will smile to you from the crowd and beckon. Once happened to a friend of yours. But in my office at police headquarters, no crowd, just me, the sergeant, with papers in his hand.
Danny?
Yeah, what is it, Gino?
I'm worried.
What's the trouble?
Next year is leap year.
And it worries you, huh?
Go ahead, laugh. Make funny jokes. Make mockery of Daddy's cares and woes.
I'm not making mockery of anything, Gino. What's the trouble?
My eldest youngster, Tina. She's 17. She told me last night that next year being leap year, she's going to pop the cork to Patrolman Reardon. She's going to offer her hand in marriage to him.
I think that's very nice. Tina's a lovely girl. Reardon's a fine officer.
Heckle me. Go ahead. I stand here helpless before your heckle. You're on their side.
Gino,
after all the thick and thin we've been through, shoulder...
Did you get what I asked for?
First, let me finish. Shoulder to shoulder. Yeah, I did.
Tell me about it, huh?
Carol Bennett is dead from strangle unknown, tossed into the Harlem River and found at 11:23 a.m. by
Tell me about Carol Bennett. What did you find?
Minor misdemeanors which caused a plague of 30-day sentences by our magistrates and many unheeded lectures by same. A girl prone to petty thefts, etc.
Well, where'd she live?
A drifter, mostly outside of Harlem. Checked out her last address early this morning, threw $20 at her landlady and said, don't bother about the change, who needs it? And I'll give you a piece of advice. I think she was strangled by that Ross Locke so that she could not testify against him. You want an all-points bulletin, Danny?
I'll let you know. I think I know where to find her. Back again to the tenement where the boy had first been picked up. And it's day now. No nighttime to veil the scarred doorways. No shadow to smother the sudden crying out that pierces the corridors. No night sound of trumpet to wash away the stillness that follows on it. Harlem tenement, huddled close in on itself against December, trying to soak up the last sunlight of a dying year and never making it. Walk through the silence that happened when your foot crossed its threshold. Up a flight of stairs, down a hall whose walls are closer against you than they were the night before. Knock on the door.
Oh, I thought you were someone else.
Mrs. Locke?
That's right. What do you want?
Ross. I'm from the police.
You're the man that was here last night?
Yes.
You took Ross away. He hasn't come home. Why?
You won't try to stop me if I take a look around, will you, Mrs. Locke?
Why should I? Come on in.
We want him, Mrs. Locke. Where is he?
I don't know. You tell me why you took him away.
He beat up a man last night, killed him.
You lie. You stand there and you lie to my face.
This morning, a girl was found in the Harlem River. A girl who'd been strangled. A girl who saw Ross kill the man.
And you're telling me, that my Ross did all that?
He left headquarters late last night. Did he come home? He's a fugitive now, Mrs. Locke.
I've heard all about them. Fugitives. I've seen pictures on streets back home.
If you know where he is, it'll be better for...
Come here, mister. I want to show you something. See that? That's a model. A model of the new little machine Ross was working on. Look how tiny those parts are. How delicate. That's the way Ross uses his hands. You're going to stand there and tell me Ross uses his hands to kill? I don't want to talk to you anymore, mister. Get out.
And leave her. And leave the scars gouged out by words and fingernails and penknives and the exchange value of a dollar. Get out into what sunshine is left. And call Sergeant Tartaglia. Tell him to get out an all-points bulletin on Ross Locke and continue with your own checking. Then have Detective Muggerman drive you to the man who, as far as you knew, was the last one to have seen Ross, the lawyer who had brought a writ. Go to the office of Lawyer Webster.
Glad you came, Danny. Glad you dropped in.
You're glad I'm glad, Webster. I want you to be in a happy frame of mind. I got some questions I want to ask you.
Ask away. Shoot.
Where'd you go when you left headquarters with Ross Locke?
I took him home with me. Gave him a clean shirt, a razor, a sauna blade, and some hot water. I wanted him to look real nice.
For what?
For my client.
Colbo?
He likes people to look real nice when they come calling.
Then that's where you took him, huh?
I didn't say that.
Come on, Webster, you get cagey with me. You're a lawyer who's gonna need a lawyer.
You're the one, Daddy. Good old you.
You ready to go downtown? We'll use my car.
Why don't you just listen sometime instead of sneering? I never said I took Ross to Colbo, that's all.
Where'd he go?
How do I know where he went? He walked out. He wouldn't go see Colbo.
You know why?
What do you think I do, Danny? Tap people's brains? I said, let's go see Kobo, kid. He pushed me against the wall, you know, playfully. So I couldn't get up for 5 minutes. He pushed me and walked out. Personally, I don't like to question playful boys like Ross.
And that's all you can tell me, huh?
Kind of bright, Danny. After all, do I look like a boy who would...
Danny.
Yeah, what is it, Muggerman?
Just came over the car radio.
What did?
They found Ross Locke. I think we better get there.
Over there, Danny. Vacant lot between the tenements. All right, you people. Now get back. Let us through, police. Let us through. Okay, officer, we'll take it. Give me your flash. Look at him, Danny. His hands are...
It was the first thing you saw in the quickening darkness. His hands. The hands that had shaped delicate things, minute things. Crushed, broken, twisted into something without form, without name, and stained now with dull scarlet of a furied violence. And the boy's eyes, as he looked at you, considered your reaction. Anguish. And something else. Something that made you turn away. But...
Ambulance, Danny. Take you, me, and the patrolman to clear the crowd.
You handle it.
Left!
Tell your boy he can quit now, Kobo.
Huh?
I want to talk to you.
All right. Take a shower, kid. See you in the morning. Brings you to the gym so late, Clover.
I checked your house. They told me you were down here. Now let me ask you the same question. What keeps you here so late?
Keep teasing myself that kid you just saw his guts up. Everything but a left hand.
As good as Ross Locke.
I doubt it. Ross gets socked with both hands.
No more.
Yeah, I know. Heard it over the radio with the rest of the bad news. Ever slap one of these light bags, Clover? It's good for the nerves. I get all tensed up when I hear news like that.
Cut it out, Cobo.
You kidding?
I said cut it out.
What's your mission here, Clover?
Two murders and assault.
How bad is he?
He'll be all right. Won't be able to build any more models.
Huh?
Yeah. Somebody hit him over the head from behind, then went to work on his hands. Ruined them.
Imagine. Figure somebody doing that to a guy's hands.
Yeah, I can figure somebody doing that.
I'm sorry. I forgot you didn't like it.
Now Ross couldn't fight even if he wanted to. Not for anybody.
You saw his hands. You ought to know.
Shame, too. Good boy like him. Can't make models, can't fight. Probably isn't any job you'd be able to do with his hands.
Tough. Tough. I'll send him something from time to time.
You know a girl named Carol Bennett?
Sure, I know her. Dame with a bottle, a dame who saw Ross kill that man, the dame you fished out of the river. Who doesn't know her?
You know why she died?
There's always a reason.
She was blackmailing the killer of a Camden shoe salesman. The man who was found beaten to death last night in an alley.
You're crazy. How could she blackmail Ross? He didn't have that kind of dough.
You do.
So? But putting away for rainy days, that gives you a long nose.
Carol was standing at the doorway of the alley. She saw what happened. Saw that Ross didn't touch that drunk. Saw Ross walk away, the way Ross said he did.
So you believe what the boy told you?
Yeah, I do. The way someone fixed his hands makes me believe it.
The boy gets himself a couple of broken hands. That makes him stop being a murderer, huh?
Let me tell you a little bit more what Carol saw. She saw you. She saw you finish the job on the drunk that Ross didn't get to do. Blackmail.
Give a good deal of my time to that boy. Even hired him a lawyer. Now, why would I go do what you said? Did I suddenly go crazy? You're off your rocker, Clover.
You were going to appear as an eyewitness to Ross's murder of that man. You told me so yourself. That way, when Ross was acquitted, he'd owe you something, fight for you again.
Anybody ever call you a deep thinker, Danny?
And when he wouldn't come to you, you found him. Wrecked him. Let's go downtown, Culver. Don't be a fool, Culver. Put down that jackknife.
It cuts, Culver. Like this,
your way. Your...
Clover. Clover! Clover, no! Don't! Don't!
Drop it. Drop
it.
Don't! Okay, Colbo. On your feet. Let's go. In a little while, Broadway will knock itself to pieces. Funny fellas with funny hats will lean out of the hotel windows and pour water on the celebrants with the tin horns. There'll be laughter and crowd and swirl. And the fine thing, the words, Happy New Year. And Broadway means it with all its heart. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Clayton Post was heard as Colbo, and Roy Glenn as Ross Locke. Featured in the cast were Herb Butterfield, Charlotte Lawrence, Jenny Ligon, and Jester Hairston. Tomorrow afternoon, don't miss the third annual gathering of CBS Radio's top foreign correspondents, all making their year-end reports on the state of the world. Ed Murrow is the host. Remember, it's tomorrow afternoon on most of these same radio stations. It's hard-hitting, it's factual, it's food for thought, it's Years of Crisis. Bill Anders speaking. And remember, those lovable rascals Amos and Andy are here every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network.
The makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective. Good evening. This is Bill Foreman speaking to you for the 10,000 independent druggists who have made the word Rexall part of their own store names. They've done that because they recommend and sell the 2,000 or more drug products made by the Rexall Drug Company. This evening, we want to call your particular attention to Rexall's sensational two-page ad in this week's issues of Life, Look, Collier's, the Saturday Evening Post, and in the Farm Journal. One page of this important two-page spread announces 10 great new products from the world-famous Rexall Laboratories. The other page features 10 bedrock bargains available at Rexall drugstores all during the month of June. For new and better health aids, for bigger and more useful bargains, be sure to check Rexall's eye-opening two-page ad in this coming week's issues of Life, Look, Collier's, the Saturday Evening Post, and in the Farm Journal. Good health to all from Rexall. Now your Rexall family druggist brings you a transcribed half hour with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency, I was curious. I tasted it. I'm dying.
You sound awful.
Oh, if I had the energy, I'd throw my head out of the window.
Hangover?
Just worn out from getting my heart started, Lieutenant Levinson.
Mr. Levinson.
What do you mean?
As of 5 minutes ago, I became just plain Mr. Levinson.
Oh, think what a shock that's going to be to just plain Bill.
At exactly 3 o'clock, I started on my 2 weeks vacation. I am going fishing. I want to get lost in the woods somewhere. Pack in. Do my own cooking. Catch myself a limit of nice, fat steelheads and rainbows.
Oh, I know. The smell of fried trout and boiling coffee.
Yeah.
Getting up the next morning. Breathing that fresh mountain air. And then realizing that you forgot to put out the fire and 20,000 acres have been burned flat.
Yeah. That was pretty mean.
I'll go on. Get next to nature.
Too bad you have to stay in town and work.
I hope you get scurvy.
Bye, Blue Eyes.
No.
Mr. Diamond?
Yeah.
My name is Holland, Mr. Diamond. Arthur Holland.
Well, sit down, Mr. Holland. What can I do for you?
First, come over to this window.
Any particular reason, or do you plan on an accidental suicide?
There should be a man standing across the street. He's been following me.
Oh? What does this man look like?
Crew cut, short, fat, wearing a black leather jacket. There he is.
In front of the cigar store?
Yes.
Who is he?
I have no idea. I've never seen him before.
Know why he might be following you?
No.
How long has he been following you?
Since this morning.
Well, okay. What did you come to see me for?
My brother's name is William. William B. Holland. A long time ago, he left the family and started out to see the world. Started working his way from place to place. Although William has been gone for nearly 10 years, not once in those 10 years have I failed to receive a weekly letter.
But he hasn't written lately.
Not for a month.
Where was the last place he wrote you from?
San Borja, Bolivia.
Never heard of it.
It's a small city in the interior. Now, while in La Paz, he wrote me that he'd met a man named Louis Frober. This Frober was from San Borja and, according to Will, practically ran the place. Now, Will said he was going to visit him, and in his last two letters, he talked much of Frober and his hospitality, but said that something was wrong in this town of San Borja.
Didn't say what it was?
Didn't know.
Then his letters stopped?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you wanted me to find out why they stopped, if anything's happened to your brother.
Mr. Diamond, I'm quite wealthy and I will pay you handsomely to take the job. Besides, it might turn into a nice vacation. South America is supposed to be wonderful this time of year.
Vacation?
Possibly.
Well, Mr. Holland, I'll take the job on two conditions.
What are they?
Well, first, my fee, $100 a day in expenses.
Accepted.
Thank you. Second, that you purchase two tickets for San Borja, Bolivia.
Two tickets?
Well, I'd like to take my assistant along. Bolivia is new territory for me, and it might be dangerous.
I checked on you quite thoroughly, and I didn't find that you worked with an assistant.
Well, only on the cases that take me out of town. He's a worldly man. He could find a trout in the Sahara. Lots of experience. 15 years with the police department.
All right. What's his name?
Walter Q. Levinson. The Q is for Quincy. But don't tell him I mentioned it. Well, that's how it works. Man comes in, wants me to find his brother, last seen in South America. Walt Levinson was looking for a vacation spot, and I was looking for someone to talk to on my way to San Borja. Result? One phone call to Fatty Levinson.
Bolivia?
Oh, but you love it, Walt. Trout as big as sharks.
Where did you get two tickets to Bolivia?
Well, to tell you the truth, Fatty, I'm going down on a little job.
See you when you get back. Bye.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, you ingrate. I've just got to find a missing brother. After that, we can relax and have ourselves a time. Oh, think of it. South America. The ocean as blue as my eyes.
Dames.
Native music under the golden moon.
And dames.
Quaint little... What did you say?
Dames.
Well?
I'll meet you at the airport.
Pan American Grace Clipper, flight 109 from Miami, Guatemala City, Panama, Lima, Arequipa, and La Paz, boarding at gate 7, all aboard.
Pan American Clipper, destination La Paz, Bolivia. And enough horsepower to get us there in a snappy 14 hours. The lights of Manhattan dropping away as we turn on the first leg of our pattern, heading up for 16,000, looking down and wondering about a man in a leather jacket and a crew cut, looking down as the lights begin to melt into a heavy, cold front. 16,000, flying south, the pitch changing the propellers into a mellow hum.
Why don't you relax?
Well, did you notice a little blonde stewardess with the high altitude features?
On the way in. I want to get some sleep.
Well, indulge yourself. I'm going to see if I can do something about the pressure in this cabin. The water on my knee is beginning to percolate. Oh, miss! Hey. Fatty. Wake up.
Huh? Oh.
You had yourself quite a sleep.
Yeah. Where are we?
Well, another hour. We're in Miami.
How'd you make out with Miss Hummingbird?
Been with Pan American 3 years, 60,000 miles, over 2,000 hours. Name's Rogers, Gene Rogers, Baltimore.
How'd you make out?
Oh, shut up.
La compañía Panagra anuncia la llegada procedente de Nueva York. Los pasajeros desembarcarán en el terminal de Panagra número 3. Pan American Grace Airline Clipper Flight 109 from New York now unloading at gate number 3.
Oh, I'm a little stiff.
I didn't know you brought anything with you.
What now?
Well, pick up our baggage and on to San Borja.
Where the devil is San Borja?
How do I know? Let's go find out. And we did. San Borja, according to the information desk, was some 200 kilometers into the interior. 10,000 feet above sea level, high on a plateau, and the only way there...
Oh, this is swell. Dandy vacation, but what happens when my liver comes loose?
Well, relax, Walt. Only 160 kilometers to go. Considering where we are, these roads are pretty good.
We'll never make it. I lay 8 to 5, we end up riding side saddle on a bilious llama.
Hey, driver.
Si, senor.
Why no airfield in San Borja?
Oh, there is one there. But it is what you call the emergency. It is hard for a plane to land. Something to do with the wind.
It's a plateau, isn't it?
Si, senor. We got to climb 5,000 feet yet.
Sounds like an ambitious chiropodist. 10 o'clock and the morning sun getting hotter. The old Ford straining up the grade like an antique teapot. 11 o'clock and the temperature crowding 120.
I want to go home.
Oh, we got to stop and let her cool off.
Blue ocean and tropical music.
Oh. How much farther, driver?
Oh, about 20 kilometers, senor. I'm going to put some water from the canteen in the radiator.
Hey, Walt, let's stretch our legs, huh?
Okay. Oh, lousy humidity.
Oh, she sure was empty.
He means his head.
Duck, Walt. On the car.
You okay?
Yeah. I think they're behind that hill. Go out this side and try to circle them. Keep them covered.
Right. Keep your head down.
Gee, I'm glad you thought of that. Walt covered me, and I crawled out behind the car and took off for a bunch of trees. They didn't spot me until I'd circled them and was almost on top of them. Two men with rifles lying behind a small hill. One of them turned and spotted me moving in. Walt?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
You all in one piece?
Yeah. How about you?
Fine. Two of them, huh?
Yeah, bandits, I guess.
You got them both. Wonder what they're after.
Our hides. Came close to getting them, too. The unexpected. Two men with rifles hiding behind a hill. If I hadn't gotten them, they'd have gotten us. We picked them up, dragged them over to the car, and I kept asking myself why. Why two men behind a hill with rifles? Bandits? Maybe. Assassins paid to wait there and kill us? If that was the answer, who told them we were coming? The man in the leather jacket back in New York? Maybe.
Dumped them in the car?
Yeah.
The driver's had it. Slug got him in the chest.
Well, dump him in, too. Let's get to San Borja and get some answers. And if you say anything about a vacation, I'll sing all the way up the hill.
The two Americans, Mr. Diamond and Mr. Levinson.
Come in, come in. I am Louis Frober.
How do you do?
Anything else, Mr. Frober?
No, that's all, Paul. Well, gentlemen, I understand you ran into some difficulty, hmm?
Well, your local constabulary seemed to think there was some law against driving around San Borja with three dead men in the back seat.
And these bandits attacked you and killed your driver, is that right?
That's right.
And you in turn killed them?
That's right.
Well, for tourists, you fight rather well.
Well, not exactly tourists, Mr. Frober. We asked to see you because we were sent here to locate a William Holland.
Ah, I see. May I offer you a drink?
Lovely suggestion.
Here I present the interests of Arthur Holland, William's brother.
That's right.
Water?
Straight.
Well, gentlemen, I informed Mr. Holland that William simply left. After all, there's nothing strange about that. There you are.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're not looking for anything unusual, Mr. Frober. This was the last place William was heard from, so this is the most likely place to try and locate him.
Of course. Well, here's to a pleasant stay in San Borja, gentlemen, and to your very good health.
Next week's issues of Life, Look, Collier's, the Saturday Evening Post, and the Farm Journal carry one of the most important Rexall advertisements ever published. One page of this amazing two-page spread announces 10 great new products direct from the world-famous Rexall Laboratories. The other features 10 down-to-the-bone bargains available at every Rexall drugstore all during June. Listen to just a couple of examples. From the product page, Rexall 5X Multivitamins, a new and vital formula that gives you five times the established daily requirement of all vitamins with known minimums. Special introductory offer. 10-day trial size, $1.79 value, free of extra cost with a purchase of the regular bottle of 50, both for only $6.95. From the bargain page, gold-plated metal-frame sunglasses, men's and ladies' styles, regular dollar value, now only 67 cents. Remember, for new and better health aids, for bigger and more useful bargains, check Rexall's sensational two-page ad in next week's issues of Life, Look, Collier's, the Saturday Evening Post, and in the Farm Journal. And now back to tonight's adventure with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Louis Frober, big man with a slight accent, drinking to our health and extending an invitation to his house for dinner that evening. One hotel in San Borja, not many tourists, according to the manager, but good rooms and hot water, according to the manager. Sandwiches and a late lunch compliments the hotel. Frober owned the hotel, according to the manager. It's open.
If you gentlemen would like, Mr. Frober instructed me to show you around the town.
Who is it?
You want to see the town?
Sure.
I'm glad to have you show us around. What's your name?
Yavacek. Paul Yavacek.
San Borja, Bolivia. Sitting on the top of the world, two-thirds dense tropical jungle. Population 335, who take 2 months every year to cut back the persistent jungle. Principal industry, tin. The mines, 2 kilometers east. Frober owned the mines, according to Paul Yavacek. Three main streets, modern, up-to-date. a clothing store, several cafes, a bank, telegraph office, post office, and a recreation hall. All built and owned by Frober, according to our guide, Paul Yavacek.
You mine tin, huh? How do you get it out?
Trucks, then by cargo plane. If you had arrived tomorrow, you would have passed the caravans as you came up the mountain. The ore is taken out once a week.
How well did you know William Holland?
Not well. Now, if you gentlemen have seen enough for today, I suggest we leave for Mr. Frober's house. He expects you at 7.
A kilometer from town, in the house of Louis Frober. The jungle not far off, and a heavy tropical shower right on top of us. Like Frober, the house was big and imposing. A showcase of its master's wealth and position.
I am so sorry that you got caught in the shower. They are pesty things sometimes, but they don't last long.
Louis?
Gentlemen, my wife, Mrs. Frober, Mr. Diamond, Mr. Levinson.
How do you do?
How do you do, Mrs.
How do you do? Dinner is served.
Dinner. The long, paneled dining room illuminated by a dozen candles. Music floating in from a hidden speaker. The food, something to make the Waldorf chef quietly fold his tent. And the conversation?
Do you plan to stay in San Borja long, Mr. Diamond?
It's hard to say, Mrs. Orber. It's a wonderful soup.
Mr. Diamond and Mr. Levinson have been sent here to try and locate William Holland.
Oh? The soup is my own recipe, Mr. Diamond. Made from barley grown right here in San Borja.
Just a casual dinner conversation, unless you're conditioned, aware of the subtle interrogation. The end of a pleasant and filling meal. Armagnac in the den, and more talk about health, wealth, and the weather. And more interrogation. 10 o'clock.
Well, I am afraid you'll have to excuse me now, gentlemen. I have to be up at 6 o'clock, and I have a hard day ahead of me.
The conventional goodbyes and exaggerated compliments on a wonderful evening, then back to the hotel. All in all, a very interesting evening, according to Fatty Levinson.
Our charming hostess slipped me a note as we left.
Why, Walt?
I must talk with you. My husband will be leaving the house shortly before midnight. Meet me in the garden at 12.
Why, Walt?
It's addressed to you.
Why, Ricky? A quarter to 12? Then out the back of the hotel, because in San Borja, everyone works for Louis Frober. Heading for Frober's house, Walt 50 yards behind, because in San Borja, a note asking you to meet the wife of Louis Frober might easily be a trap. Maybe William Holland had received just such a note. 12 o'clock and Mrs. Frober moving through the moonlight in the garden south of the house. Walt behind a tree, ready for anything.
I'm so glad you came, Mr. Diamond. Where's Mr. Levinson?
Well, he stayed behind. Why did you want to see me, Mrs. Frober?
It is about William Holland and my husband.
Where is your husband, Mrs. Frober?
He left with Paul for the mines. From what I could find out, he's going to meet someone. Someone of great importance.
Oh. What about William Holland?
I am sure he has been killed. And I am sure my husband had him killed.
Go on.
We first met William in La Paz. He was likable, easy to talk to. I had been married for 2 years, and it was my first trip away from San Borja. I liked William.
You know anyone in New York? Blonde, short-cut hair, plump face, might like to wear leather jackets?
No.
Well, go on with your story.
A year after I married Louis Frober, I began to suspect something wrong with his activities here in San Borja. The men who came to see him on business. Strange men. Foreigners to South America. Long nights of business meetings and trips to the mines. When William finally came here, I told him of my suspicions. And one night he informed me he was going to the mines to investigate. I never heard from him again.
You think it had something to do with your husband?
Right after that, I overheard a phone conversation by my husband. He was talking to someone he called the director.
The director?
Yes. My husband said that William had found his way into the mines and had been eliminated.
I see. You've only known your husband for 2 years.
2 years and a half. I met him in Rio while he was down on one of his business trips. I married him 6 months later and came to San Borja to live. Would you like to know where I met my husband, Mr. Diamond?
If you think it's necessary.
With what I've come to believe, I feel that it is most necessary. I met him
at a party given by the Russian embassy. Mr. Diamond, I am sure that my husband is an important official for the communists.
Along the road east of the Frober mines, no lights, just the moon. The sounds of the jungle raising the hair on the back of my neck. A kilometer from the mines, and the dull glow in the sky pointing the way. Frober's generators and manpower working late. The kilometer passed, and the tenseness in the middle of my stomach took on cramp-like proportions. We climbed a hill for a better look.
Pretty busy. Must be 30 trucks down there.
I'm getting them loaded for the trip down the hill.
Hey, listen to that.
Well, I'll be darned.
Is that what I think it is?
Well, the fields in San Borja make it tough for a plane, but for a helicopter, that's another thing.
Frober left the house to meet somebody important.
Anybody who comes into San Borja in a helicopter at night is a pretty good bet to be important.
Our dead driver said there was an emergency field.
Well, it's landing on the other side of the mines. Must be close.
You want to take a look?
Well, not too many men around those trucks. Before we go looking for that copter, I want to see if it's really tin Mr. Frober's taking out of that mine. Down the hill, walk 20 yards behind in case of trouble. Picking our way through the brush, trying not to sound like a landslide. A long road running away from the mines towards San Borja. The line of trucks, the first dozen or so loaded and ready, their backs piled high with sacks. A short sprint, and I was boosting myself up on the back of the first truck, digging into one of the sacks, feeling the heavy chunks of ore, then down off the truck with the ore in my hand.
You're up late, Mr. Diamond.
Paul Yavacek, Frober's right-hand boy, standing in the darkness, his gun pointed right at my stomach.
Mr. Frober will be happy to know of your interest in his mines. Start walking up the road toward the main gate. Stay ahead of me. Keep your hands in sight.
Tell me something, Yavacek. How do you get 10 out of pitch blende?
I suggest you ask Mr. Frober.
He's at the mines?
He will be.
Drop it, Yavacek!
Thanks, Walt, thanks. You all right?
Yeah, it's close. Yavacek?
Dead. Come on, let's get out of here.
Where to?
Well, Mrs. Frober said her husband had a phone conversation. I'm going to use that phone and warn La Paz about Frober.
Hold it.
What is it?
Car coming down the road. Frober.
Yeah, and he's got company. Probably his important visitor. When he finds out what's happened, he'll guess it's us. We'll never get back to town before he does.
Unless we drive.
I will take a chance on the confusion and grab that first truck.
Clear. Keys are in the truck. We must live right.
Yeah, but for how long?
There is a direct phone line all the way to Covendo. The operator at Covendo can put you through to La Paz.
Bueno. Operadora de Covendo, ¿puede recibir?
She's talking Spanish. You better take it.
Esta es la señora Frober. Favor de conectarme con La Paz.
Minutes running out. Mrs. Frober looking frightened, waiting for La Paz to answer.
She has them.
Ask for the embassy.
Car pulling up.
La Embajada Americana, por favor.
Frober and his important friend.
Mr. Diamond, I have them.
Hello?
Yes, American embassy.
Now listen carefully. I can't repeat. This is Richard Diamond, American citizen, calling from San Borja, Bolivia. Louis Frober is not mining tin. It's pitch blend, and is believed to be working for the Russian government.
Look out!
Diamond. Rick. Okay.
Mrs. Frober.
I'm all right.
Take a look at Frober and his friend.
Hello, hello. What happened?
Hold on a second. There's been some trouble.
Frober's friend is dead.
Oh, no.
Frober's moving, but it doesn't look very good.
Hello, hello, La Paz?
Yes, Mr. Diamond. Go ahead. What about Frober?
Wait a minute. Maybe I can get him to tell you himself if the phone will reach. Frober. Frober, can you hear me? Hello, La Paz. There's been a shooting here, and Mr. Frober's dying. Frober.
Yeah.
Frober, you're dying. You want to tell us about it? You're mining pitch blend instead of tin, right?
Right.
You're working for the Soviet Union?
Yeah.
Did you send two men to ambush me?
Our agents in New York watched Arthur Holland and reported that she had been hired.
The guy with the crew cut in a leather jacket.
Did you have William Holland killed?
Yeah. He found Arthur Hall.
Robert. Hello, La Paz. Frober's dead.
This time of year, no woman wants to spend endless hours caring for her skin and makeup. Since you want the finest beauty care in the least time and with no nonsense about it, why not try the new Andelafield Cosmetics? Designed expressly for the busy modern woman, they give you the most for your cosmetic dollar and save time as well. There are no endless bottles and jars, no endless creams for different corners of your face and neck. Just one fine cream, the Andelafield All-Purpose Deep Cream. A day cream, cleansing cream, night cream. All creams in one. There are vitamins, too, for true beauty from within, and other lovely makeup aids tailor-made for you. Look for the fine Andelafield Cosmetics at Rexall drugstores everywhere. Good health to all from Rexall. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, stars Dick Powell in the title role and was written by Blake Edwards with music composed and conducted by Frank Worth. Dick Powell directed the RKO production Split Second, which is now in release. And his latest film appearance was in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer award-winning The Bad and the Beautiful. Heard in tonight's cast were Arthur Q. Bryan, Wilms Herbert, Ben Wright, Jack Crucian, Virginia Gregg, Don Diamond, and Lillian Byatt. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. This is Bill Foreman inviting you to be with us next Sunday at this time when Rexall Drug Products again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Remember, for new and better health aids, for bigger and more useful bargains, check Rexall's sensational two-page ad in next week's issues of Life, Look, Collier's, the Saturday Evening Post, and in the Farm Journal. You can know better health. You can save money.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week with another hour featuring Whitehall 1212 and Sexton Blake Detective. In between now and then, you can find thousands of other old-time radio episodes at relicradio.com, alongside more from Broadway Is My Beat, Richard Diamond, all the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream, and everything else we have going on. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, you can do so by clicking on that donate button on the website, or visit donate.relicradio.com. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts. Any amount is always appreciated and helpful. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.